Saga Egmont presents A Chance in a Million by T.A. Williams. Read by Helen Duff. To my wife, Mariangela, and Christina, my daughter, but above all, to my new granddaughter, Iris, I look forward to taking her to the magical city of Venice sometime in the future. Prologue. It was the silence that so often brought it back to her. She was lying on her bed, gazing unseeingly at the ceiling. All sound disappeared, and the only thing she could hear was the pounding of her own heart. She was awake enough to know she wasn't quite asleep, but her subconscious was yet again taking her down memory lane, and she was powerless to stop it. The bedroom around her disappeared, to be replaced by bright sunshine and the all-too-familiar vision of dust and devastation that had once been the quiet suburbs of Fallujah. The events of that afternoon once more took shape in her head. She could actually feel her fingers returning to the shallow depression in the sandy earth that she had been painstakingly excavating, spoonful by spoonful, for what seemed like an age. Lying out here in the baking sun, she was bathed in sweat. But she knew from experience she would have been sweating from the tension, even if the ground below her had been frozen. She inched her fingertips into the soft soil again, until they landed on the unmistakable feel of electrical wires, and confirmed that she had found what she had been looking for. Turning her head gingerly to the left, she called over to Mark, who was dealing with an unexploded bomb in a crater 20 yards away from her. "I've got it, Mark. It's definitely an IED. She tried to keep her voice as low as possible to avoid startling him. She saw his face emerge from the crater, his cheeks bright red and running with sweat.
"Need a hand?"
She shook her head. "I'm all right. Just thought you should know."
"Okie dokie."
He didn't wish her luck, because that was something they never did. This was their job, and if they did it right, there would be no need for luck. That was what they had been taught, and they respected the tradition, but both of them knew it wasn't true. In this line of business, they needed all the luck they could get. He just gave her a smile and a little wave, before ducking back down into the crater as she returned her attention to the landmine in front of her. With infinite caution, she continued to remove the earth, scoop by scoop, until the top of the device was clearly visible. As with so many improvised explosive devices, at first sight it looked mundane, little more than harmless builder's refuse. But by now, she knew that this sort of homemade landmine was anything but harmless. She had seen the horrific results so many times already here in war-torn Iraq, as people struggled to rebuild their lives after the bitter fighting had finally moved away, while the menace of unexploded ordnance remained an ever-present threat beneath their feet. Inching herself forward on her elbows, she took a good look at the IED. Drops of sweat ran down her face and dripped into the dust beneath her, but she didn't dare move her arm to wipe herself dry for fear of sparking a detonation. After blinking to clear her eyes, she saw that the cable had been stripped at one end and the positive and negative wires were fastened to two harmless-looking pieces of wood, while the other end disappeared into an ordinary 5-litre paint can, the trademark on the lid still clear to see. From experience, born of months of active service, she felt sure that this was no longer filled with paint, but with homemade explosive, laced with lumps of shrapnel, capable of destroying everything and everybody in the vicinity if it went off, starting with her. She lay there and studied the problem now facing her. Under normal circumstances, she would simply have retreated with infinite caution and then detonated it remotely and harmlessly. But in this instance, she knew that was impossible. First, there was Mark and his unexploded bomb to her left, while less than 3 meters away to the right,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?